Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, senior NBA insider for HoopsHype.com and the host of the Hoops Hype podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by an old friend back in town once again. It's Brooklyn Nets guard Spencer Dinwiddie. We'll discuss how signing with the Brooklyn Nets pretty much changed the trajectory of his career, a little bit of the Kenny Atkinson era, KD, Kyrie, what to expect this season. It's good to see you in town, brother. Thank you for coming on the pod with me. I remember back when you first came here, you know, it was before you had a son, first of all, and you were just kind of getting your foot in the door in the NBA. I mean, how did playing for the Brooklyn Nets and that decision ultimately change the trajectory of your career to where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, I did two years with the Detroit Pistons, and then, you know, obviously I was in the D League. I signed with the Nets on a 3-year non-guaranteed deal. But really it was a developmental squad. Kenny Atkinson obviously, took great interest in his players, you know, mentally, physically, the development process, which was huge for me. And I got a chance to make mistakes and, you know, unfortunately, but fortunately I did benefit from some, injuries to some guys. But then I was able to kind of stick a little bit.
And then after that, I mean, You made the most of that opportunity, and you touched a little bit on Kenny. For you, what were the best behind the scenes kind of stories with Kenny? Because he's a little bit of a firecracker at times.
He is. I think it was just when he tried to play with us. I think and like actually on court, like play basketball with us, and you know, you could see that switch flip where he really felt like he was a player in those moments, and he wanted to win the game, and he got competitive and all that stuff. And I think that was probably the best parts and memories and things like that. It was just fun to see him get out there, try to hoop and, you know, not be able to win, but think he could.
Towards the end of that, I think he hurt his knee, and that was kind of...
He did. He tried to isolate Jared Allen and tore his quad tendon, and it was, I mean, unfortunately, like, but it was funny though, kind of, I mean,
you know what's funny? If anything, I can imagine him trying to get around Jared at that point. He was still a little lanky.
Oh, yeah. But. No, I mean, he used to, like, you know, jog and run to work and stuff like that. He'd show up in his tights and everything. And, you know, he was in good shape for his age. But, I mean, obviously he still couldn't. It was all, what, 23, 20, something like that. Like, he's not playing with us at 40 for real.
I don't even know if you knew this, but he used to live down the block from me. And Kenny. And he would get up sometimes like 4:30 in the morning. I'm like, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, no, that was Kenny. I'm not surprised at all.
And he would get here and whatnot. But, you know, you touched on Jared a little bit. And, you know, when I had seen Jared and Karis come back to town with Cleveland a couple of times, we always talked about that big summer when you guys got KD and Kyrie. And Jared and Karis were both telling me, like, that was not the, like, original plan. I mean, for you know, you guys didn't necessarily think that that was going to happen. What do you remember about that summer and what was kind of the original plan and then how things unfolded after that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, don't get it twisted. Like, if you're looking at a big board, right, like, why wouldn't, like, KD be the, you know what I'm saying, grand plan, right? But obviously, you know, there's a lot of talk and things like that swirling around and, you know, you're wondering if any of that is possible or if it's feasible or all that stuff. And so, yeah, I do remember, you know, names like Tobias and Jimmy, Butler and stuff like that, being talked about. But yeah, I mean, it just kind of unfolded the way it unfolded. And, you know, I think, the Nets were blessed to be able to welcome in, you know, at the time, three big time talents, right? It wasn't just KD and Kyrie, it was DeAndre Jordan as well. Have that kind of clean sweep, quote unquote, moment. It just didn't materialize in the championships, unfortunately, but I think it was a beautiful moment in time.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned about like kind of all the talk and like the big board. A lot of people at that time were talking about KD with the Knicks. Like that was going on for at least,
half that regular season. I mean, Kyrie having local roots, I could have seen that, but you were there, and unfortunately that year you got hurt.
Yeah.
But I was always curious if you ever thought of maybe what could have happened if you didn't get hurt that year, and then later on, you know, James Harden had gotten acquired by the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everything happens in stages and phases. I think when you look at prior to me getting hurt, in the preseason and the regular season, we played, I think, like 7 games, maybe 8 games, something like that, and we won all of them by like 30, right? So does the James Harden trade still happen? I don't know. You know, I think it would be hard-pressed to break up a team that's rolling through everybody by 30. Maybe it still does. You never know. I mean, it all comes down to front office and max players and what they feel they need at the time. And obviously, James is coming off playing at a MVP caliber level. But yeah, I mean, whether the trade happens or doesn't, I mean, obviously, I thought we were good enough to win it prior to the trade, prior to me getting hurt. I know we had a little bit of slide after I got hurt. And then, you know, obviously, if I could have played with the big three, I definitely think we would have won as well. But, you know, that's all if in hindsight and unfortunate circumstances. I mean, I think the big three would have won without me as well. Like, right? Like, if Harden and Kyrie don't get hurt that year, I think, you know, they were so close to doing it with KD virtually, you know what I'm saying, by himself, quote unquote, right? You know, the way Jeff Green and, you know, Bruce Brown and guys were playing at the time. I mean, it was just a high level roster all the way around. And, you know, it was a cool thing that the, you know, Sean Marks and the front office put together.
I mean, definitely other executives around the league were pretty shook when you guys had that team to start the year. And then the James Harden trade, I think the final straw was when you guys were getting like Blake and LaMarcus. I had execs just texting me like, how much help do they need? Like it was a fun ride in that sense. But the last thing I would leave you with on that kind of trio, to me, it's almost like the greatest what if, what could have been. I don't know. Maybe one day there'll be maybe a 30 for 30 documentary. I don't know. But why do you think that trio wasn't able? I mean, I know you talked about injuries, of course, you know, but why else do you think maybe that trio didn't live up to hype? Because, I mean, when you're playing a team like that and you build a roster like that on 2K, I mean, it's like.
It's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, that's why you roll the ball and you play, and I firmly just believe it's injuries. I think just injuries and timing, you know, and then obviously it came up to contractual stuff and, you know, people want to get the contracts they want and all that other stuff, and that's the business of basketball, you know what I'm saying? If all of them were locked in, you know, for 4 or 5 years or whatever and couldn't go anywhere and didn't have an option to do that, I feel like they'd have figured it out. There would have been no way that they couldn't have. It's too much talent. They're too good. There's nowhere to go.
Yeah. I mean, don't even get me started on that, because KD was the one that opted in first at anybody. Mm-hmm. And then, as we've seen now, Harden and Kyrie have lost a little bit of money. I mean, they're still like top tier guys, but they're not crying over spilled milk. But it's an interesting point you bring up. Yeah. And you go to Washington, that's kind of like a blurred lines like Robin Thicke. We'll skip that. But with the Mavericks, two guys you got to play with that turned into pretty good players, certainly Luka Doncic and Jalen Brunson. I wanted to ask you on those two. With Luka in particular, you had a chance to play a little bit off the ball with him. Mm-hmm. With Luka, what do you think for him is kind of his career trajectory by the end, and how special of a player is he to play with?
One of the most special players on the planet, and obviously one of the most special players in history. I think he's going to be able to have whatever type of career he wants. If he wants to, well, maybe not take the scoring title, just because I think it would take too long. You know what I'm saying? I think I don't think he's going to play 20 years. I don't think he wants to do that, right? But he can win scoring titles. He could win assist titles. You know, he can go ring chase. He can choose to do whatever he wants. I mean, he can break you down in a variety of different levels. He can score at all three levels. He has post-up game. He's a bigger body than a lot of people assume. But he's also got a certain quickness to him that makes him hard to guard on the perimeter as well. And I say this all the time, like, if his step back three is working, then there's virtually no way to guard him. Like, pretty much what you're hoping for is that he sells with step back threes and it's just one of those nights where he's just not really that on. Cause, you know, I mean, obviously he's a good shooter, but he's not Steph. So you just hope he kind of gets into that mode and he's not on and that's that. But if he's, you know, being relentless in terms of just breaking down defense, there's not too much you can do with him.
When you were in Dallas, Jalen Brunson was playing behind you guys a little bit. And now he goes to the Knicks and you saw him in the playoffs. This guy really had a breakout campaign. Yeah. Borderline All-Star didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Tyrese Halliburton did. But did you know that Jalen Brunson was that good, like, in practice? And two, like, what, now that he's got a chance to play, you know, 35 minutes a night, what can he be?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a guy like JB, it comes down to green light, volume of possessions, things like that. I mean, you saw even in Dallas a really high level shot making. I mean, in game one of the playoffs, I believe he had 40. You know what I'm saying? When Luka was out and was carrying us to, you know, a 2-1 record against the Jazz in that playoff series when everybody thought we were going to lose. And really, we should have been 3-0. You know what I'm saying? I missed like some free throws and stuff down the stretch in game one that, you know, with his play, like we'd have won the game. We'd have been in a position to possibly sweep the Jazz, like, you know, without Luka. And that's a huge credit to JB. And like I said, it's high level shot making, the ability to get into the paint, play off of 2 feet, never get sped up. I think he's a super smart, high basketball IQ guy. And he's also a lot stronger than people give him credit for. So, you know, at his size, when he kind of gives you that chicken wing, he creates enough space, gets a shot off. No, that's the truth. I mean, and so, you know, he's playing a lot of good ball. And then obviously, you know, with the Knicks, he has talent around him too. You know, Julius Randle, all-star, Mitch Robinson, big-time rim protector, you know, IQ, Grimes, RJ Barrett. I mean, shoot, he's a $100 million player. So, you know, you have other guys there too. And, you know, he's doing a great job of kind of maestroing the ship.
You're going to have your own $100 million player. We'll talk on later. I'm kind of kicking myself. I asked you about him on media day, but I'll definitely circle back to him. But you look at this team now coming into this year, totally different scenario than the Kenny Atkinson era, different than the Big Three era. This is a fresh start. You get Ben Simmons back. You know, Mikal Bridges was very efficient last year. Sure. You piece all that together. You got you, Cam Johnson can shoot the ball, lights out. What do you think? Because everybody, you know, media fans, they have their expectations. What are your expectations for this team this season?
I mean, I've said it before, it's really just make the playoffs and, you know, kind of roll the dice from there, see how far we can take it. There's a lot of unknowns, but obviously we certainly hope that, you know, Ben kind of gets that all-NBA type of level. And if he does that and he's able to lead us, then, you know, we'll pick up a lot more wins than probably expected right now.
You touched on Ben a little bit. I guess a two-parter here. Do you feel like, from what you've seen, he can get back to that three-time All-Star, All-Defensive guy that we saw when he was at his peak?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if you look at age-wise, he should be getting ready to start peaking now. So then it comes down to health. And you look at, you know, just who he's been historically. We need him to be an All-NBA, All-Defensive Team, All-Star type of guy for us to be good. So, you know, I mean, and obviously we can't make any guarantees, but that's what you need to be a good team.
You kind of are one of the veteran guys. You're like one of three guys, I think, that are 30 plus. Mm-hmm. For you, when you look at this team, you've talked during preseason a little bit about how Ben's kind of got to be the guy.
Yeah. Ben and Mikal.
Ben and Mikal. I was going to say, with those two, like, they're more, how are they as like leaders in terms of their style? Because I would think, you know, they seem quieter, at least in media availability, but how are they behind the scenes with you guys and kind of taking the reins?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're good kids, but super knowledgeable, obviously. And so, you know, they have pure intentions and good hearts and things like that. And so they're trying to do whatever they can to help the team win. And so I think as leaders, that's really important to know. And to feel that as role players on the roster.
What are your expectations for Mikal Bridges this season, given what we saw last year coming into this year?
Well, we need that same Mikal to be good. You know what I'm saying? Like, we need an all-NBA Ben and we need an all-star Mikal. So we're going to need 25, 26, 27. We're going to need, you know, what is that, 47 from the field, 40 from three, you know, or 38 from three, 85 from the line, whatever that is, 25, 26, 27 points. You know, a big time offensive threat. Yeah, those two are going to have to play at an extremely high level for us to have any chance of being actually competitive in the East.
Do you think Mikal can be an all-star this year?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Other than that, with Mikal, I mean, I think he's going to be, especially if he shoots the way he did. But you talk about all these other guys. I do want to throw it back to you a little bit. So we got a little bit of what we need from Ben. We got a little bit of what we need from Mikal. What did the Nets need from Spencer Dinwiddie this season to help this team go as far as it can?
I think it's just to remain flexible and take it as on a night-by-night basis. Sometimes it'll be, you know, like in Miami, chasing a shooter like Duncan Robinson. And it's just kind of being flexible and ready to do whatever's called to me.
When you look at I asked you this on Media Day about Nick Claxton, and you said that this guy could be a $100 million guy. Yeah. At worst, I think it was 80.
70. I would say if he shifts the bet, he'll probably get a contract like Zach Collins, which was, you know, his was 2 years, 35, but I think Nick's a little bit younger, a little bit healthier. So he'd get 3 or 4 years at that same, like, you know, 17, 18 range, which puts him in that $70 million type of category, or, you know, 55 over three, I guess, right? Because when we were talking about contracts, I was thinking over four. And then you look at probably high-end, probably like a Jaden McDaniels, who got that big-time rookie extension, the five-year, what, 135, which is what, like 27 a year probably. Mm-hmm. So if you put that over four, that'd be, what, 108, 110, something like that. Mm-hmm. You feel me? So I would say that's probably like Nick's range. If you look at a four-year deal, it's probably – 70 to 110 is probably what I would say. 17 to 20, 27, 28 a year.
Sean Marks is going to hear this and be like, you're making me sweat a little.
Hey, man, it's just numbers and comps, man. Like, that's what it all comes down to in leverage, right? So you got a young player like Nick. I mean, Jaden only averaged, what, 12 points? So did Nick, but Nick led the league in field goal percentage and also was on the possibly a DPOY, similar type of thing. I mean, obviously, Jaden has probably a little bit more versatility in terms of being able to guard 1 through 4. But if you look at Nick as a switch big, he can guard 1 through 5. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the only people that Nick really struggles with is, I would say, Embiid and Jokic to a degree. But at the same time, like, everybody does. So he would not get paid for not being able to guard the two MVPs. It'd be because the 28 other nights, he's locking down, blocking stuff at the rim, switching 1 through 5, stepping out on a Harden, stepping out on a, you know, Luka, for example, and, you know, guarding. And, you know, for example, on the last play of that game winner that I had, you know, he says it all the time. We joke in the locker room. He's like, man, if KD don't double, like, I'm stopping that, you know, and whether he does or not, who knows. But that's the type of confidence he has in his defense. And so, you know, that if you just look at around the league, comps, things like that, I mean, it's pretty simple what type of money he should make. And again, if we're winning, if Ben's all NBA, if Mikal's an all-star, averaging 25, 26, 27, and Nick's in that DPOY type of lane, then he's going to get all that because we're also going to win at a type of level that will warrant that.
And also he's unrestricted, so he definitely has a better chance to get paid.
Of course.
But, you know, you talk about kind of – the way you're talking right now does remind me a little bit of like Kenny and Jared Dudley when you guys were all together. It's like if we all win, everybody's going to eat. D'Lo got paid that summer and everything. I will take it back to that a little bit and ask you, do you see – any similarities at all with this group and that kind of Kenny Atkinson era where whether it's, I don't know, a chip on a shoulder, something to prove, contract status with some guys, you know, including yourself that are playing for a new deal at some point or an extension?
I mean, I think to a degree, right? Like, I think a lot of guys have chips on their shoulders. I think we're somewhat in a developmental stage, a kind of a we'll see type of moment because we're trying to see who is going to take what leaps and where. I think obviously we're a lot older, and I don't see our main guys necessarily playing for contracts, you know, and even myself, like I'm not playing for an extension. I don't do extension conversations during the season, and I've been fortunate enough that I've already played 10 years, so I've already earned my pension. So like where I am and where other guys are is two different things, right? Like I'm kind of at a retirement type of level, like if that's what it had to be, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, Nick, on the other hand, like, he's 24, about to, like I said, make $100 million. So it's a completely different situation.
What's been the biggest part of his game that has grown from when you had him as a rookie? And Lord knows we've seen the hairstyle change, yeah. But anything else about him that's grown from your perspective?
Just the focus and the maturity, man. Like, from day one, I talked about his talent. It's always been there. But he's just, he's growing to his own. He's a grown man now. You know what I'm saying? He's not a kid. Like, and he's owning the talent that he has and the responsibility that comes with that. And, you know, if you're willing to be responsible and accountable, take charge of your own development and be focused in your intention to try to dominate games, which he has the potential to do. And I think he has another level he can go to, then the sky's the limit for him.
Another guy that's going to be important for your overall team success is Cam Johnson. He just got paid. I don't know if he's taken you out to dinner yet as a group, but I would hope so. When you look at Cam, first off, a lot of people obviously talk about his three-point shot. I mean, when you look at him across the league, like, where does this guy rank as a shooter?
I think as a pure shooter, he's right up there with the best of them, right? So you're talking about the Joe Harris's, the Klay Thompson's, all those guys. I mean, historically, his percentage is right in line with those guys. And I think, you know, one thing about him, though, he's a little bit bigger, a little bit more athletic than people give him credit for. And so, you know, you close out too hard, you know, he's going to be able to put it on the floor and make plays in that respect as well.
What can he be for you guys this year, slash what does he need to do for this team to go as far as it can?
I mean, you know, I said it prior. I think we've got probably eight guys in that top 10 rotation that can be, you know, big time all defensive team type guys. And I think he's one of them. And then on top of that, you know, again, maintain that big time shooting, be able to hunt space for us, create gravity for us, because we're going to need that, obviously, given the fact that we do also have two non-shooters in the lineup. And obviously, they close out too hard. Go dunk on him like you did in the playoffs, man. I mean, I think he's got that. So I think that'll be phenomenal.
I don't know. I didn't know he had that. I thought of like the Shaq, like I wasn't familiar with your game. Nah. Man. Like that. When I saw that, I literally was on my couch and I said, holy, you know, poop emoji.
Yeah.
But that really, that got me for sure. Another guy who kind of lit it up like Times Square on New Year's Eve for you guys last year was was Cam Thomas. This kid had 340-point games. And you look at him now, this kid looks like he certainly hit the weight room a little bit. And, you know, he's having his protein, that's for sure. Yeah. With Cam Thomas, I mean, what can you see out of him this year? It looks like he's going to get more minutes and a knock on wood for him, a consistent role compared to last year.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's probably the best tough shot maker on our team. I think he's one of the guys on our roster that's really built to play a one-on-one isolation style game. I think that'll be huge. I mean, as of right now, and I don't know for certain, but it looks like he'll be our sixth man. I think he's going to be able to come in, you know, make shots, just kind of pin his ears back in a sense and just go get buckets. And I think he's one of the best on the team doing that. If you told me there's a world where, you know, he's our, let's call it second leading scorer behind Mikhail, like, I wouldn't necessarily be shocked. I mean, right now, I'd probably say maybe third behind Cam Johnson, because I think Cam Johnson will probably end up shooting a three at a high level. But there's definitely a world where I see that happening and playing at a super high level. And, you know, like I said, he's probably the best tough shot maker on our team and also one of the only capable of really, like, just playing one-on-one and breaking down a man.
If he does that, either second or third, I mean – I'm doing the math in my head. That's a sixth man of the year candidate then.
Hey, I think if he does that, then, you know, we're definitely a big time team, because that means Ben's at an all NBA level, triple double threat. Nick's DPOY, you're probably looking at 12 points a game, but he might be getting 2-3 blocks, 8 boards, probably something like that. Mikhail 25-26, good efficiency. Like I said, if I was a betting man, I'd probably go Cam Johnson 17. Or so, maybe 18, just because of shot attempts, type styles of shots. But then, if you could get Cam in a 16, you know, in that slot, but that super sub, some nights he's going, you know, 25, and then obviously you're gonna have some nights he goes 12, just because that's how averages work. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, you know, he's in that sixth man of the year conversation, and I think it sets him up for a rookie scale extension, since this is what be the end of his third year. He'd be in line to get paid, and that'd be phenomenal.
if all this is happening, I'm picturing you last year, you, when you came back, you had about 9 assists a game. So then you would be, you know, handing out quite the helping hand.
I mean, I think that comes more down to Ben. I think Ben, like I said, has to be a triple double threat for us to be good. But, you know, I'll be in there, like I said, just filling in the gaps. Like, so, you know, if it's a swing pass here, you know, open threes there, just figuring it out as it goes.
When you talk about filling in the gaps a little bit, you obviously had to fill a big gap last year when you came in from the trade. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was either when you did your first media availability back or when you and I were talking, but I think you said to your son, we're going back home.
Yeah.
Am I correct on that?
Yes, sir.
So now that you you touched a little bit on it, and God bless, you got your pension, but you still got hopefully some more tread on those tires. So I'm curious for you, like, what have you thought about your future at all? That it is obviously a contract year for you and, you know, potentially being here for an extended period of time after this year?
Oh, I mean, you know, that all comes up, but comes down to Joe and Sean at the end of the day. I mean, obviously, I'll be a free agent at the end of this year. Like I said, I earned my pension already, so it is what it is. And then we'll see what happens after that. But, you know, the team wins. If you got those type of guys rolling, then, you know, at bare minimum, you know, I've left the team in good hands, and if it's time for me to, you know, ride off into the sunset, that's what it is, and, you know, I'll be a Brooklyn Nets fan.
What, you're not riding off into the sunset. It's too early for that, because then you're going to make me feel old. And but, you know, I'd say one thing. You're talking in the before you did media availability, before we did the podcast, and you said after 33, you pass your prime. I'm 34 now.
I was talking about basketball prime. I mean, shoot, you
haven't seen me
now.
Shoot.
I might gotta put my foot in my mouth, but I mean, in terms of life, though, I mean, with the way people diets now and the way people taking care of their bodies, I mean, they saying 40 to new 30, 50 to new 40, like all that other stuff. People are aging backwards, damn near. You got people in their 50s moving around, having the mobility like they're in their 30s. So. Don't get it twisted. Like, I think I'm going to have a long, fruitful life. I'm going to be able to, you know, do a whole lot of things for a very long time. Hopefully, with the way I eat when I'm 70, I'm still rolling around just having fun. But, in terms of basketball prime, I'd say probably like 33. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm 30 and, you know, a lot of guys, obviously, they play to 38, whatever, 37, 38, stretch it out. It was just a conversation on what happens for me after this year. And like I said, I'm gonna be a free agent and see what happens.
I mean, LeBron's gonna be terrorizing the league when he's in his 40s. But
LeBron's a completely different story. I ain't playing until 40. That ain't gonna happen. You know what I'm saying?
I was actually about to ask you that. In all honesty, how long do you want to play for? Is there an age? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
Shoot, I don't know. I don't even know.
Never thought about it, huh?
I mean, I figured, my body would tell me, you feel me? Like that's what I thought. And, you know, I've been, like I said, pretty fortunate to, in my opinion, have one of the best work ethics in the game and be diligent on diet and recovery and all that other stuff. So in a lot of ways, like I feel better than I did, you know, when I was younger, to be honest. Like it's actually crazy. I think sometimes injuries, like when you have to reset and refocus and things of that nature, like you start thinking about it differently and you take a little bit longer term approach. And then a credit to like Mike G, my trainer, and like all that other stuff. And you know what I mean? Shoot, like last year I'm dunking on Giannis and Brooke Lopez and Rudy Gobert and all that other stuff. Stuff that you guys probably wouldn't have thought I would have done when I was in Brooklyn the first time, you know, when I was 25 or whatever. So, you know, it's been fun to kind of age backwards a bit. As far as retiring and stuff, I mean, yeah, I would say that conversation just has more so like understand that my contract over and I'm about to have another kid. So it's like, yeah.
I got two more for you before we head on out of here. You touched on how like your body would kind of tell you when it's time. For you, given what you went through, the injuries in college, the year where you hurt your ACL as well with the Nets, like for you to be at this point, I mean, what has if you could summarize your basketball journey, what has it been like for you? Has it, I don't know, surpassed expectations? Like, what's it been like for you? Because you've had a bit of a wild ride, bro.
Oh, yeah. Nah, I mean, I think the funniest part about the whole situation is, like, it's not near what I expected as a child. But in a sense, I've been able, outside of winning a championship, done everything I wanted to do. Like, I got a chance to prove to everybody that, I mean, I could average 20 points in the league. I could probably average 10 assists in the league if I wanted to. You know what I'm saying? With the way last year went, I'm year over year in the top 10 isolations. The only other players to do that are max players. So that literally makes me one of the singular biggest offensive juggernauts in NBA history, whether people say it or not. So, like, and on top of that, when I'm getting 9 assists, I'm doing it with a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. So, like, really what I've shown myself is, like, there's nothing I really can't do. I led the league in corner threes last year, or left corner threes, I think it was. Catch and shoot, 40%. Like, is you go down the list of just, like, the advanced analytics and the ability I have. And then people will always be like, yo, like, you should put it all together. And I tell everybody all the time, like, it takes a massive green light to put all that together. Like, to be able to be the 10 assist guy while also averaging 20-25, while also getting as many ISOs as you want and as many catch shoots as you want. And, like, nobody has that many possessions outside of the Lucas and the Trae Youngs and all that other stuff. So, you know, being a guy that whose name is in Sexton, you know, you asked me to do this, I can do it. You asked me to chase Duncan Robinson, I can do that too. You asked me to be catch and shoot, I can do that too. You asked me to ISO with the best of them, I can do that too. Like, so for me, I think it's been fun basically proving to myself that, like, I'm one of the baddest people to ever, like, do this thing. Whether or not people really, like, believe that or agree with it, like, I can debate that all day, because the likelihood is that I can show you a skill set to where I've reached a higher peak than anybody that's your favorite player, no matter how famous, how many all-stars they got, how many whatever, which means effectively there are pieces to my game and a lot of them that just can't be beat, that, like, really, like, nobody else can do. And so for me, that's fun as hell, because, like, it allows you a massive amount of peace, right? So, like, whether you get the money that, you know, you should or shouldn't or whatever, or you get the status, or you get the all-star selections or the awards or whatever, like, it don't matter. Because, like, well, it does matter to a degree, like, obviously, but in terms of, like, an internal piece, like, who else can say that? Like, you got to remember, points per possession, I was second in the league behind Kyrie. And everybody would be like, Kyrie's the best ISO player in the league. Well, he was last year. But guess who was second? Me. And guess who had a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, getting 9 assists a game with a new team that he didn't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so much there. And then they're like, oh, well, you're not athletic. Well, I dunk on defensive players of the year. I've dunked on Gobert. I've dunked on Giannis. I've dunked on Brooke Lopez. Like, that shit is, like, when you start listing this shit, it's like, bro, what? It sounds crazy. But I've done it all. So it's fun in that respect.
Dunking on Brooke Lopez is kind of net on net crime.
It was great because he was hot. But we're friends, though, yeah. So it was funny as hell. You know what I mean? Like, it was funny.
Man, it is interesting to kind of have you put all that together. You summarized that very well. I also feel like you are well prepped for, like, the summer. I feel like you and Jason Glushon are, like, going to go over all these things and crunch the numbers. But, you know, you talked a little bit too about, like, not knowing, you know, when it's going to be that you do retire, but one day eventually you're going to hang up your sneakers. When you do, you know, you've been described as a tech guy with a jumper. Yeah. So what does Pulse basketball look like for Spencer Dinwiddie? Is it staying in basketball, coach, executive?
No, it's over. I'm telling you right now, Galaxy has a 9-figure evaluation right now. Or evaluation, sorry, not evaluation. If in the next bull run cycle it can reach 10 figures, hey, listen, guys, y'all ain't going to hear from me. I promise you. I promise you. Like, I promise you. That, you got to understand, that's my little baby. Like, that thing hit 10 figures, bro, along with some of the other stuff, like genies and stuff. Bro, y'all ain't going to hear from me. I'm retired. I'm being a dad. I ain't gonna hear from me. Like, I watch games and stuff. Of course, I love the game, but I ain't working in basketball. This shit too stressful. It's too much politics and shit. I don't like none of that. It's over.
You gave a good evaluation for Claxton, so I thought maybe even if you would do an agent or something
I would love to be in a situation where, like, you know, just being OG. Like if players reach out or, you know, if if anybody needs some help or something, like I would love to be an asset. I would love to be somebody that, that helps people. And so maybe the Players Association taps me as a resource in some capacity. But I promise you, like I said, once once Cassie hits 10 feet, because we position well, as soon as that happens, bro, it's a wrap.
Well, I'm glad you entertained us a lot with your tweets way back when. You don't tweet as much either, right?
I'm basically off Twitter, to be honest.
I noticed
that. Like, yeah, I don't do none of that. Like, usually the only times I get on is because Cassie needs me to do something for it or something like that. And I mean, even Instagram now, for the most part, is like collab posts and, you know, accepting like Brooklyn Nets, you know, things and marketing things that, that half the time it's my agent doing it. You know what I mean? So don't get me wrong though. Like the DMs, I told him like don't respond to none of my DMs. So like if I'm DMing like a fan page or something, it is actually me. So I do be on Instagram. So don't take it as if you're getting conned by my agency or something like that. But nah, I mean, it's just social media in general, not for me as much as it once was. And I just kind of be chilling. Like I said, I'm prepping for dad life, bro. I'm like straight up. You know what I'm saying? I got me a Koenigsegg and a nice house, and I'm prepping for dad life number two.
I could see the joy on your face. Yeah. I've gotten to see a lot of smiles over the years from you, including this podcast. I appreciate you joining me, my man. Thanks as always. I also want to thank everybody else for tuning in. And if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops Hype Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players such as Spencer Dinwiddie, coaches like Mike Brown on the last episode, executives and media members, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter. I still tweet. I still have to tweet for work. I'm not Spencer Dinwiddie. I don't have a 10-figure valuation just yet. You can follow me at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following Spencer too for when he probably retweets this podcast. He's at @SDinwiddie_25. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.